Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Now get the guns, the drugs from my generation. I'll take the fall. The saints across the nation, and it's a sin. The guns, the fame, the fraud, the messer with me.
It's an abbreviated open this evening because, well, frankly, I'm under the weather and Tony couldn't be here because he's sick. So we're looking at a slightly shortened version of the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network tonight. I should probably mention who I am, the whole he thing, pronouns, pal. I'm Harry Broadhurst. I'm your host here of the Raw Reaction. As I mentioned, Tony Acero got called into work tonight and therefore was unable to watch Raw, unable to recap Raw, and will be unable to join us to talk about Raw here on the show. However, joining me as per usual, the line in the sand, Andrew Ballad.
All right, now you're going to make me like the theme song. God damn it. It was a gimmick for everybody to hate. Now I don't hate. Oh, damn it.
Well, I guess, awesome.
You know. It is a good song. I don't hate the song as it is, but you know what I mean by you did it as a gimmick to get everybody to hate it.
I did kind of run it into the ground last October.
A little bit, yeah. But, you know, Raw Reaction abridged. This is going to be a nice night.
Yeah, let's – so, real quick before we get to Raw, let's talk non-WWE stuff, shall we?
I mean, we can.
I'm finally getting around to watching some of the WrestleMania weekend shows. I'm still working on United We Stand coming soon to thechairshot.com because being sick puts me on my ass and doesn't have me in the mood to sit up and type reviews. That being said, I'm starting to feel a little bit better. I'm up to the four-way for the Knockouts title, and there is a line on the review that I want to share with you here real quick, and I want to get your thoughts because I know you watched United We Stand.
Mm-hmm.
You ready? Katie Forbes' entrance. Single-handedly setting back the women's revolution at least a decade and a half.
You can keep it in there, obviously. It's a good take. I don't know, though. You have to have tolerance for every version of everybody. That's kind of the whole point of the women's revolution is to equality and accept you for everybody that you are, because there's not just one guy. There's a bunch of idiot guys. There's Joey Ryan charging people $30 to grab his dick. If she sets back women, how far does Joey Ryan set back humanity?
A level that we can characterize how far Joey Ryan has set back the business with his shtick.
Exactly, and he's on that show too.
What's up, Jimmy C?
How do you do? Oh, and here I was thinking I could just listen and be quiet, and now you've buzzed me in.
Oh, well, if you were just calling in to listen, that's fine. I just heard you could say hi. If you were just calling to listen in, that's fine. I can put you back on hold.
Oh, no, I'm here. I might as well stay.
Well, we were kind of an abbreviated version of the show tonight anyway, so... Honestly, on the week where Tony's back, it might be easier for you to come in on a more substantial basis.
I mean, I'm not trying to be substantial or anything, but, I mean, like I said, I was just listening to your guys' points, listening to what you had to say about this evening and whatnot. Personally, I enjoy Joey Ryan's shtick, but, you know, teach their
own. The problem is that Joey Ryan is full of shtick now. He actually was at one point a very good worker, and now it's become all about the gimmick to him, and it makes his matches unbearable at times.
And like I say, that's to each their own. I guess that would just depend on what you find entertaining. You know, I think he's still an excellent worker, and what he does is entertaining for enough people that he's still getting booked, that his name is well known throughout the business. So, I mean, it just, I guess it depends on how you look at it.
All right, Andrew, let me ask you, what do you think of Joey Ryan's basically female equivalent in Priscilla Kelly?
That depends. Like, the tampon spot, that made sense. It was, like, some kind of no ropes, hard, like, you know, kind of hardcore street fight rules, kind of whatever the hell they do there. So, I'm okay with that. Shock and awe. It was at a bar for adults. It's kind of expected. The whole puking on his dick thing, if we're going to go there, that there's no room for that. So, no, that's fucking retarded.
Have you had a chance to see anything from Priscilla Kelly, Jimmy?
No, I've not.
Never were a huge women's wrestling fan, so I didn't imagine that she would be somebody that you would be searching out. All right, so tonight's episode. All right, well, I'm going to go ahead and put you back on hold. If you have anything to say, feel free to text me, and I'll chime you back in.
Sure.
All right. So tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw is from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and we open with Stephanie and Shane McMahon because, of course, we open with Stephanie and Shane McMahon. We can't go 2 weeks after WrestleMania without opening with Stephanie and Shane. Stephanie goes to introduce the first person moving from SmackDown to Raw. Shane cuts her off and has Greg Hamilton. I think that's Greg Hamilton. I know that's not Mike Rome because Mike Rome is the SD guy. I think that was Hamilton. Anyway.
No, Hamilton's the SmackDown guy. I don't know.
Was Hamilton on SmackDown?
Yeah, Hamilton is SmackDown, the chubbier, lighter brown-haired guy. I don't know who the Raw one is off the top of my head.
Mike Rome, probably.
Most likely, then. If those are the two, then that's probably Rome.
I mean, it's basically like the backstage interviewers that you can't really tell them apart either.
True, because it's not like they have a discernible personality, so...
Yeah, the only backstage interviewer that I recognize and would immediately when I see her is Charlie, and that's because it's Charlie.
Kayla's recognizable. Her personality just
Dasha's
comes through
fired.
More on Twitter than it does. Thank God. Dasha was interview bot, you know, embodied. She was worthless.
Not to mention she had like three different flubs that 1 week, and I think that's kind of what did her in, too. That was the last straw. Anyway, back to us doing the abbreviated version of the show. Stephanie then does eventually get around to introducing who the first person moving from SmackDown to Raw is, and it's The Miz, who takes out Shane, probably setting things up for them to have another match at Money in the Bank, most likely, in addition to keeping Miz on USA Network and something that we talked about before we went on the air, and I completely agree with you that this is going to be a corporate synergy situation to keep Miz on USA Network with his reality show that him and his wife do.
Yeah, that's really the only thing. The only thing that I could say that's a negative about this move is it happens every year. Like, Miz always moves. I don't think there's been a shakeup where Miz didn't jump, and it feels almost counterproductive where you give him 7 or 8 months of good buildup, and you think, all right, after he gets out of this feud, he'll be in the title picture. And then they ship him to the other brand, and you're like, okay, now he's got to kind of start sort of from the bottom, middle, whatever you want to call it, and work back up. Yay.
The thing is I think Miz has enough goodwill behind his character as either a babyface or a heel, and especially as a heel, we'll see how it translates as a babyface, that he's able to get that following, to get those fans to dislike or like him, hopefully, now that he's a babyface again, as I mentioned, once he's switching back and forth between brands.
I don't have any issue with having faith in his ability to get himself over and push himself to the top. It's just, it always seems like it's a few months before Miz gets his footing in whatever the storyline is, because either it's a goofy thing he's thrown into or some kind of off and on thing like with Daniel Bryan where he could only allude to it and then go to other things until Daniel Bryan got cleared. And, you know, now the thing with Shane. I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, the thing with Shane could have crossed either brand, so I'm not thinking they're dropping this yet. I feel like there's going to definitely be at least one more match between the two and probably multiple more matches between them. Money in the Bank coming up. I wouldn't be surprised to see them have a match on Raw in order to determine whether or not Miz is eligible for the Raw brand or the men's Money in the Bank ladder match.
All right, so it's going to be Mr. Miz on a pole?
Did they re-sign Vince Russo and nobody tell me?
Oh, you know what? Here's the perfect thing. They keep calling him Mr. Potato Head, so you have a ladder match between Shane and Miz, and just put a little Mr. Potato Head at the top.
The views and opinions of Andrew Belez do not necessarily reflect those of us, the rest of us here at the Chair Shot Radio anyway. Speaking of views and opinions that do not reflect us here at the Chair Shot Radio Network, the Viking Experience. What the fuck?
I think we all feel the same way about the name.
Yes, they don't reflect us here. Like, I can understand not wanting to keep War Raiders, and especially not keeping War Machine because of the whole Marvel thing. I get that, too. War Raiders, you own the trademark on if you were using it in NXT. That was a perfectly competent nickname. Like, I get that Vince McMahon looks at them and think that these are two big, strong Viking bastards. Let's go with the whole Viking Experience thing. And they've kind of teased it before with mentioning Sarah Logan on Monday Night Raw as well, so I assume she's going to end up paired with these guys sooner rather than later. That being said here, I've seen other people bitching, complaining, pissing and moaning that this is the kiss of death for these guys before they even have an opportunity to get started on Raw. Do you agree or disagree with that assessment?
I mean, it's not the kiss of death. They're still good workers. It's stupid. And everything that got tweeted out, apparently there's a, I'm going to say unfounded rumor because I don't think it's completely substantiated, that cable TV has an issue with the word war being on a team name. So they had to change the war of War Raiders, and they came up with this. Yeah. The only way I'm okay with this, to be honest, is if SmackDown gets a different experience and they just kind of play the synergy there, because the Velveteen Dream on SmackDown would be okay with me. I'd be fine with that.
In this particular match, the Viking Experience teams with the Revival to defeat Ricochet, Aleister Black, Zack Ryder, and Curt Hawkins. Congratulations, boys. You won the titles. Now take this, Al. When Zack Ryder falls victim to Fallout to give the Viking Experience the win and the probable number one contendership to the Raw Tag Team titles, the Revival aren't long for Raw, in my opinion. I think we see them jump tomorrow night on SmackDown, moving over to the Blue Brand here. Are you okay with Rowan Hansen, Ivar, and Eric, or whatever the fuck it is now? I think it's Ivar and Eric. Are you okay with them being the new de facto number one contenders to the Raw Tag Team titles? Because there is another team to talk about that we will get to here shortly.
This is copy and paste of exactly what they did with Black and Ricochet, really, if you think about it. You know, the title holders took a lot of L's that brought up the new team. The new team's going to then be positioned well. Huzzah. So it'll be a good match. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's kind of, you know, paint by numbers.
Cedric Alexander is moving to Monday Night Raw from 205 Live. I feel like this is the worst possible career move for him.
I mean, worst possible is a little strong. I don't think it matters much at the moment, but we'll see.
All right. Allow me to expand upon that assessment here.
Sure.
Of all the places in the WWE where Cedric could have landed, Raw is the worst fit for him because Raw is considered to be the entertainment show in the WWE. Cedric is not exactly known for his entertainment ability. Cedric is known for his sports, his athletic abilities. That's one of the reasons why Mustafa, now just Ali, worked over on SmackDown, because he didn't have to do a whole lot of talking, even though he could handle himself on a microphone. He was allowed to let his in-ring work do the bulk of his speaking. On Raw, Cedric's going to have to be able to get his character over in addition to his in-ring content. And if I'm being perfectly blunt here, and I hate to say this, I've not seen enough from Cedric that tells me that he's capable of doing that from a character perspective.
The only thing I'll say is that the two champions currently on Raw, assuming nothing changes tomorrow, fit and suit a 205 Live call-up. Like Cedric Alexander maybe getting one of those plug-and-play open challenges against Finn. That'd be fine. Even with 10 minutes, Finn can put on a good match. Plus, Finn didn't really have a lot of personality for the first 2 years he was up on the main roster. A lot of these people don't have personality. Ricochet, he does flips. If Cedric does flips, it doesn't seem like they care. They're not in the business of really, like, hammering home the character, which is why the soap opera aspect of Raw tends to fail and be a schlug at times, because no one gives a shit about the characters aside from the already established main event talent. So we'll see. I think it's okay. He talks better than Mustafa does. He tells a little bit better of a story in the ring because he's a little more animated. He has more than one speed, more than one gear, more than one emotion. I don't hate it. I don't think it's a kiss of death for him.
He does have the permanently established Cedric Alexander face gif as well whenever somebody kicks out of a big move when he's pinning them.
True, but so that's like also very WWE to have the huge reaction, because Seth Rollins does the same thing, like he just shit himself every time someone kicks out.
I feel like if we were doing like the little montage here, we would put Cedric's face in the gif right there. All right, speaking of the Intercontinental Champion, Finn Balor's up next, taking on the next newcomer from SmackDown Live, and it turns out to be Andrade with Zelina Vega. They go 10 minutes and 35 seconds, about 7 of which was shown. Andrade picks up the win after Vega gets involved on the floor. Back in the ring, Andrade hits the Hammerlock DDT to pick up the pinfall victory over the Intercontinental Champion, because apparently we're pinning all the champions tonight. Fuck them.
Well, that's how the debuts go. If you debut, you win. That's kind of the formula WWE's always used. It was a damn good match. You know, you can't argue the match.
Are you telling me it's Oprah theory? You pin a champion. You pin a champion. You pin a champion.
Hey, it's the easiest way to come up with contenders for a belt.
I mean, you're not wrong, but it's also the easiest way to make your champions look like crap. Regardless here. No, the match was really good, and I saw people upset about Zelina getting too involved in this contest. I think it works because it protects Balor. It sets the stage for Balor to try to go get somebody to help counteract Zelina, much the same way Johnny Wrestling did with Candice Wrestling in NXT, and how Aleister Black did as well in NXT when he faced Andrade. And it also establishes somebody new in the upper mid-card for Monday Night Raw that Balor can have a competitive match with while keeping him away from people that he's completely and totally outsized by, guys like McIntyre, guys like Bobby Lashley. It puts somebody in Balor's weight class that he can have a phenomenal match with here.
And, yeah, you're completely right with those points. But the other thing you have to realize that is a built-in excuse for all of wrestling throughout all of time is whenever it's a person they're not familiar with, that's always the cop-out. Well, I didn't expect you. I haven't wrestled you before. I didn't know your shtick. That's why you beat me then. You caught me by surprise. I'll get you next time. That's why there's the old saying is the money's in the rematch, more or less, because you can catch a person once by surprise if they haven't faced you or they don't watch your show, aren't on the same show, whatever, and then the next match should be better.
I thought the chemistry was really good for these guys here, and I look forward to seeing them in a non-commercial interrupted match where they'll have the opportunity to go balls out.
As long as Andrade remembers how to take a clothesline over the top rope in that next match, yes, I agree.
There were a lot of, clunky moments in a lot of the matches tonight, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that an unfamiliarity level from being separated from these guys for a while, you know?
Oh, I agree. So there's a couple. The ring work still wasn't bad in any of the matches. Like, nothing was awful, to be honest.
Elias performs, Elias gets interrupted. It's a running joke here on the Raw Reaction. I feel like Elias would benefit the most from being moved to SmackDown, just because I think SmackDown would be a much more, what's the word I'm looking for here? SmackDown has less time, but they make better use of it. And I feel like on SmackDown, Elias would be able to get his performance in and then get his match in, whereas on Raw, they have to rush through things despite being a longer show. He's interrupted by Rey Mysterio, who sends Elias out to the floor. Well, I guess technically they got into it on the floor, and then Rey went into the ring, and then Elias came back in, and then Rey sent Elias back out to the floor. But the big news here is that Rey is then confronted by Lars Sullivan. Sullivan hits the freak accident and then hits a gut-wrench power bomb to leave Ray laying. The gut-wrench power bomb actually looks pretty good.
Ray's 5 feet tall. Of course it looks good.
What do you make of Rey Mysterio moving back over to Monday Night Raw?
It's fine. It's a bigger name for Raw. It fits the mold that, you know, the older established veteran, big kind of names are on the flagship. I'm fine with this. Again, Finn, Seth, Rey fits the mold that can have a good match with them. This probably just indicates that we're going to be well removed from any Brock matches for the next few months. So we'll get more work rate style matches on Raw. But I'm fine with it. I don't hate it. I'm getting a little annoyed at them building into the interruption gimmick. Elias kind of giving it away. You know, last week, the person who interrupts you, he's a dead man, Taker. The person who interrupts me, you'll never be able to see show his face again, masked wrestler. Okay, I get it. Like, he's going to run out of lines eventually, but I kind of said my piece last week about Elias where I'd like him to be in a real fucking feud and wrestle instead of this gimmicky stuff, but it gives him a decent rub. People still like it. Some people are still mostly entertained. So it's a thing. Yay.
We've seen Ray work well with bigger opponents before. He does underdog and peril very well. Do you think that Ray will be able to get anything watchable out of Lars Sullivan?
Oh, I don't want Lars Sullivan going near him. Ray's still kind of fragile. Ray still could be legitimately nursing some kind of knee injury. I don't want him anywhere near Lars. So eventually, sure, as the first actual feud and not just somebody he randomly runs in on and smashes, no. No. Make it Mojo. Make it somebody that he can just eat. I'll be fine with that.
Hey, speaking of things being given away before they happen, Chad Gable and Bobby Roode are in the ring cutting a promo talking about issuing an opening challenge, and the Uso Chiron accidentally pops up. Someone's getting fired. They then issue a challenge to any tag team in the WWE, and guess who answers?
The Hardy Boys?
As I said, someone's getting fired.
Oh.
Usos versus Gable and Roode lasts a little over 5 minutes. The Usos pick up the win with a double Us pinfall on Chad Gable. I mentioned earlier that the former Rowan Hansen, now Ivar and Eric, are the probable number one contenders to Hawkins and Ryder's Raw Tag Team titles. I'd say whoever comes out of that match as the champion is definitely going to be looking at Jimmy and Jay very shortly thereafter, were they not be?
I'd rather Jimmy and Jay kind of help to build up that awful tag division because they don't need to be in the main event right now. Like, if the main event Royal, like, kind of sticks around Hawkins and Ryder, the Revival, maybe War Machine, maybe Black and Ricochet, assuming they don't move or get split up tomorrow, I'm fine with that. Have the Usos build up the other people to make them look a little bit better and actually have a real tag division. I'd prefer that. I want the Usos maybe by Survivor Series to get a shot at the Raw titles, but I don't want this to be like SmackDown the last like 2 years where it's the New Day or the Usos and then the Bar after they moved over kind of got in there a couple of times, but it's still mostly the New Days and the Usos. And it just turned into like rock, paper, scissors.
I understand where you're coming from to an extent. However, I think the Raw Tag Team titles need some credibility brought back to them after the way that the champions have been treated recently. I feel like the Usos could be a team that help establish those Raw Tag Team titles as being worthy of holding again before they then work on building up the teams into being competent enough to have the belts themselves. I think the belts need a facelift before the tag teams do.
My counterpoint to that would be, if they're the only real, like, legitimate team that hasn't already been destroyed by bad booking, too, and then they get the titles, nobody else in the division will actually look like they have a shot, save for whoever they put into a storyline and have build up and then challenge. So I think you need a stronger division, and then the champion can elevate the titles when the titles actually mean something because the division is actually solid. But, you know, different perspectives. I know how that works.
Moment of Bliss with Alexa features Sami Zayn as the guest. Sami definitely playing to the crowd before revealing that it's all a ruse and he hates them all. Ha fuck you, Montreal. To the point that he says that he doesn't even live in this city anymore. He moved to Orlando, Florida. Kind of Mickey Mouse organization runs down there anyway. Sami is at his dickish best here, actually, going over the fact that he loves the city but hates the people because it was the people who drove him to where he got to and then drove him to the point that he was putting himself out there that he got injured. He says that he will no longer accept their reactions and that they should be ashamed of themselves for how they react to the various superstars. Alexa quasi turns babyface here. I mean, she's been kind of tweener-ish as the hostess of WrestleMania anyway. She kind of turns babyface here, calling Sami out on that, saying that it's not the people that are to blame for Sami's actions. It's Sami himself. Sami completely downplays that argument and then says that he knows where he's going. The question is, do the people here know where they're going? See you in hell before he walks off. I thought Sami was really well at playing this crowd like a fiddle. I thought it was weird to see Alexa kind of baby facing herself here. What did you think of A Moment of Bliss?
I thought the best part was the beginning where his music played like 3 times and then he even did the fucking Olay chant. And he fucking telegraphed it too. He's like, you really want to get him going? Hold on. Ole, ole, ole. I'm like, all right, fuck you. Okay, that was kind of meta and fourth wall breaky. I'm okay with that. Alexa, on the other hand, I don't think it was a babyface turn. I think that's just her playing talk show host. Because if you notice, whenever you watch Kimmel or Conan or whatever you choose to watch, they always play devil's advocate to whatever the guest says just to kind of get conversation flowing. So I wouldn't take that as an Alexa babyface turn because Alexa is just really good at being Alexa. And part of Alexa's shtick is she thinks she's the best host. So she knows how to do her thing. It was entertaining. I could have dealt without 3 times the music kicking in, but regardless, it milked the crowd. It got the point across and it kind of really, really caused them to, like, viscerally boo him afterwards when he just ran him down. So it got the intended reaction. I'm happy.
With somebody like Seth as the WWE Universal Champion here, I feel like this plays perfectly for Sami to take a run at Seth for a pay-per-view match, and it's a match that I personally would love to see on top.
Sami can work with anybody, so I'm not against that.
So you know how my theory for tonight's episode is if you're a champion, fuck you?
Okay.
Iconic! Up, and now they're not. It's an act that can easily bounce back from a loss. I'm not going to sit here and say that it's not. The match is the Iconics versus Bayley and her tag team partner, Naomi. I feel like if Tony
Green,
were here, he'd
not
be
purple
bitching
this
right
time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I feel like if Tony were here, he'd be bitching. I feel like this might be borderline racist to say, and I apologize for it in advance, but apparently Bailey's only allowed one black friend at a time.
True. But if those two stay together as a tag team, that's a whole lot of ass between the two of them. Holy shit. I don't even know what to say. I can't.
You're
just
welcome.
I can't bounce like a whole roll of quarters off of both of them. Like, that's wow.
You're welcome to Naomi. I got dibs on Bailey here.
Okay, I'll take Naomi. I'm fine with that.
I feel like Jimmy Uso might have a problem, but hey, it's our show. We'll talk if we want to.
Exactly. It's all hyperbole. But regardless, yeah. And the Iconics are the perfect example of the type of character that would use the excuse I said a few minutes ago with, well, we didn't expect Naomi, so she took us by surprise, and we didn't even expect to have a match because we were just talking shit, and then Bailey wanted to solve it in the ring, so we weren't ready. And that's perfect. That's exactly the type of reaction they should have, and it protects them completely and doesn't make the belts look worse, and they're a goofy heel gimmick anyway, so you're not going to expect a lot of classic matches or, like, great title defenses. You're going to expect some shenanigans and bullshit.
With the announced match of Paige bringing a team up to face them on SmackDown, does this put kind of a damper on that match for SmackDown by having them lose to Bayley and Naomi so convincingly here?
No, it's beautiful because it gives them an actual reasonable chance to win. Because if Bayley and Naomi beat them and Sasha's still having her temper tantrum on the floor or whatever the fuck she was doing, and say it's the Sky Pirates or say it's Ember comes over and teams with Asuka against them or something, it gives it a multi-person match, which means the Iconics can do the same thing they did in the four-way, kind of duck out and then take advantage of things at the right time and be the opportunistic heels that they are. Because 2-on-2, do you really believe they can beat anyone?
They did beat the Brooklyn Bells.
Yeah, that's true. And they were
45-0.
Yeah.
They snapped their undefeated streak, man.
You got a good point there. I forgot about that last week. Yeah, no, never mind. They're more legit than I thought they were.
No, I'm not going to sit here and say that we're meant to take the Iconics seriously as a tag team because we're not. But at the same time, I feel like part of me can understand the validity of the argument of establishing the women's tag team titles by not having them on a joke tag team. But the other part of me says to that argument, well, don't be such a whiny bitch about how you're losing the titles.
Why are they a joke tag team? It's professional wrestling. We've had Mounties. We've had undead people. We've had, you know, any plethora of characters hold titles, and it doesn't suddenly invalidate it. But just because they're playful and, okay, they're not work rate wrestlers, they're character-based wrestlers, that suddenly makes them bad?
Oh, no, I'm actually a fan. You're misinterpreting here. I'm actually a fan
I'm
of
I'm not
Peyton
saying
Malone.
You. I was using the general you because that is a very common argument that's popped up lately that, oh, now the match quality won't be as good. Why the fuck do you watch wrestling if it's just for match quality? Like, that's not what wrestling is. There's multiple parts to it.
Because your name is Dave Meltzer. Never mind.
Oh, well, yeah, but then again, we know if it's not in the Tokyo Dome, it doesn't matter. So that's fine.
It's at least a star and a half more in the Tokyo Dome.
Exactly. Even the Oakland Athletics know that. So come on, let's go.
I cannot tell you how hard I laughed when I saw that tweet.
Oh, I did too. That was good. I appreciated that.
Are you okay with Bayley and Naomi possibly being a full-time team? And do you think that this could lead to complications between Bayley and Sasha if Sasha comes back?
I'm all for Team Deadass. Like, Team Deadass has got my vote. And I don't know, maybe that just means Sasha gets moved to SmackDown, and that would be a good start for her, possibly. Or restart, I should say.
Sasha gets moved to SmackDown when she's not even at the show. Oh, yeah? You want to take your ball and go home? Well, fuck you, too. You're away from your best friend if you do come back.
I mean, that's petty. That fits the Vince kind of motif. I'm okay with it.
100%. Braun Strowman to EC3. Oh, boy. You think somewhere
that
EC3's
wasn't even a match.
You think somewhere EC3's in the back now thinking, I wonder if Impact's hiring.
Yeah, I think he's wondering why he left in the first place, honestly.
Facts. There's just, I have no words to describe this year. You finally put the guy back on Monday Night Raw, and it's only to have him get his ass handed to him by Strowman, who's probably going to SmackDown tomorrow night anyway.
Yeah, probably, even though I don't really want to see that, because he sticks out like a sore thumb over in SmackDown land. So I really don't know what the hell they're doing with him.
They talk about the Eric Young move coming over to Monday Night Raw. I actually like Eric Young, and I hope that he gets an opportunity to stand out as a singles wrestler on the Raw roster. He won't, but I hope he does.
He is a better tag wrestler, because usually when he singles, they give him some kind of awkward gimmick, be it comedy or somewhere that you don't completely believe it because he is undersized. But he's a great worker. Like, I've loved his work for over a decade. So I'm not going to complain.
Just don't fire Eric. That's all I ask.
Basically, yes. Oh, maybe he gets back together with Bobby Roode. Team Canada reunion.
Well, I mean, you have Adam Cole throwing Canadian destroyers down in NXT. What's to stop them from signing Petey Williams?
I mean, he's still on Impact.
I mean,
Impact
other
TV
than the Impact Wrestling contract. Yeah,
I'm just like, yeah, that's the one issue.
I don't know what Aleister Rouse is up to these days, but I'm sure whatever it is, he can stop and find time for a Team Canada reunion.
You never know. I mean, I'm okay with it, even though you're not going to have
DeMarc
because he's one of the execs in Impact.
I have over under on 2 years of Vince buying Impact, so it won't be long until DeMore's back under contract with the company.
Possibly.
Becky Two Belts, the man, the champ. Take your pick. I was going to throw another one in there, but I spaced on it. There was another one she used, but Becky Balboa, I guess, for the sake of completion, whatever.
The champ.
She doesn't use it. That's just fucking stupid.
That's a
anyway.
McGregor thing. It's an Irish thing. Don't you besmirch Irish people.
I'm English. We don't get along.
I know we don't.
There's a reason Tony's usually here to sit in between us as a mediator. Anyway, Becky Lynch takes on Ruby Riott. Does she retain? Was this for the title? They don't specifically say at any point. I'm guessing it wasn't.
It was not. Anyway, it was a positioning one.
Well, the position is that Ruby remains exactly where she was, tapping out to the disarmer in 4.5 minutes. After the match happens, Liv and Sarah proceed to get tossed around like rag dolls as well. Got to make the champ look strong, I guess. Which does not fit in with the narrative of this show up to this point.
Yeah, that's true. See, there we go. Becky didn't job out with her title. It was the next match that had the debut that jobbed out with the person that debuted.
Your thoughts on the Becky-Ruby match?
Ruby needs to stop wrestling people with titles because I thought it was actually just offensive that Graves and Cole were trying to hype her up as a threat and, you know, oh, she's had some championship matches. She looked real good and she's someone to be taken seriously. She got beaten like 15 seconds by Ronda once, 5 minutes the next time because Riot Squad got involved. And the only reason she got offense in on this one is because Riot Squad got involved and then she got tapped out fucking easily. Come on. Like, if that's not destroying credibility, I don't know what is.
Yeah, if it weren't for Roe and Hansen, Ivor and Eric, whatever, if it weren't for them making their debut on Raw tonight, I would say send the Riot Squad over to SmackDown. Let them start from scratch over on SmackDown here. But with Roe coming up to Monday Night Raw now, I would think that at least Logan's going to stay on Monday Night Raw. And I don't feel like Liv and Ruby, just the two of them, would have the same effect as the three of them together as a trio.
I mean, Logan's
Graves
the one that
did,
doesn't whip, so you never know.
Graves did get in a pretty good line about Liv Morgan, though. You could see, I believe the line was something along the lines of, you could see Ruby and Sarah moved over to SmackDown and Liv drafted back to the second grade.
I missed that one, but yeah, that one's not bad. That's kind of funny. I'll give him points there.
Natalya arrives to talk to Becky about their history against each other. She is interrupted by Lacey Evans, who announces that the lady can get what the lady wants by using her lady wiles. God, don't let them do anything with Lacey and Shane McMahon. Leading to an announcement of a number one contenders match to come up next between Lacey Evans and Natalya, the winner to get to Becky Lynch for the Raw title, now that we have established that Lacey is Raw specific. Yay, I guess, ish.
I'm happy.
The match itself goes about 4 minutes. And Lacey Evans picks up the win with the Murrow Salt, having used the women's right to set it up. All right, two things here. One, are you okay with her not using the women's right as a finish like she did in NXT? Two, do you think she'll be allowed to keep the Marisar after she completely kneed Natalya in the stomach with it?
Yes, on all accounts. I mean, when Mustafa Ali pinned Daniel Bryan on SmackDown and did his 450, he caught Daniel Bryan in the face with a knee. Like, shit happens.
Yeah.
She's not the first one to misjudge, and won't be the last.
Okay, but you'll notice that the 054 has since been taken away from Mustafa Ali, and he's now just doing a standard 450.
I did notice that in the last one when he got the pin, but I'm not sure if that's going to become his finish or if that's just how they decided to finish the match for some reason. I don't know. That's still an outlier until we see more. But, I mean, Johnny, insert last name, has been using the Starship Pain for, what, 10 years and has hit it clean twice? So, trust me. A little missing of your finish isn't going to stop people from using it. And I really enjoy the fact that the women's right was boiled down to a signature, because Becky no-sold it the first time. You know, last week on Raw, Corey named it. She kind of no-sold it, like she was rocked but not on the floor. And then SmackDown, she got dropped because Lacey got a little bit of momentum behind her to sneak her and drop her. So I think at that point you had to make sure it wasn't a finish, because that would have looked bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only reason that I'm okay with the women's right not being a finish is because of how we saw it play out with Becky last week here. I think against some of the lower people on the roster, the women's right could still be a finish. And in certain spots, depending on the angle she hits it at, you could still use it as kind of a by surprise finish. So I'm not opposed to Lacey getting a new finishing move. I'm not sure that this Marisar is going to be the answer for her. Top rope corkscrew moonsault. I don't know if that's going to be the answer for a finish for her. But I'll admit that it was visually impressive to see her pull off. I worry about the landing, because, like I said,
she pulled it off.
I was more concerned about Natalya when she came down, though, because she came down knees heavy right into Natalya's chest with it.
Natalya's
well,
got
into her stomach
there.
More so.
Fine, don't worry.
On behalf of all of us, Natty, I'm sorry.
You said chest first. That's where I went with. I'm not calling her fat. I hope you realize that.
You're calling her busty, which I don't disagree with.
There we go. So, yeah. And
Nat,
if you notice, they didn't
Nat
even
is
name
significant.
It.
Go
Continue.
Ahead.
I was just going to
say
they
Nat
didn't
is
name lazy finish. We need to stop that. Damn phones and delay. All right, so I'll finish. I was just going to say they didn't name Lacey's finish, so I'm thinking they're not sure if that's going to be her thing moving forward, but I'm okay with it because she hit it fine enough. Now go. Talk about the boobies.
Well, if we are nothing if all about the boobies here on this show. Nat's very underrated in that department, but that's neither here nor there.
Fair enough.
I don't think Nat gets enough credit for how beautiful she actually is.
That's just because her personality is very annoying. It's hard to get past that.
Okay, so you'll sympathize here because you've watched this as well. You've watched JJSB3, right?
No, I did not watch Spring Break.
You haven't watched Spring Break yet? Okay, I won't
so
go into too many details.
I watched Bloodsport instead. That's kind of where I was.
I won't go into too many details and ruin anything for you if you plan on watching, because it is worth the watch. But what I will say this much is Teddy Hart came out with his cat, and I couldn't help but think to myself, oh, my God, he is the male Natalya.
The difference is he's not so much annoying on the mic as he is just stoned and doesn't give a fuck. So it's easier to tolerate. It's kind of like Rob Van Dam. Like Rob Van Dam, when he gives a promo, you're just like, all right, he's pretty chill. But every time Natalya's talking about her cat were whining, or even the promo today where she's like, I'm the busy, is the best there was, that fucking cringe. Every time she goes there, I cringe and I die a little on the inside. So, like, I can't listen to her voice, regardless of the fact if she's attractive or not. I can't get past that. It's like, it's sort of like Billie Kay. Billie Kay, with the amount of makeup that she packs on when they're doing the Iconics gimmick, and she plays up the overly irritating thing, that really makes it hard to be like, oh, wait, she's actually a cute girl, and she's actually kind of cool. But that character she portrays is fucking awful.
Three things. One.
Shoot.
Billie, hi, Iconic. You leave her alone. Two. I don't necessarily think that it's, I don't think it's so much character work for Billie and Peyton, though. I think that's kind of how they are with each other in real life, too. Like, they have that very silly sense of humor with each other in real life just because they've known each other for so long. They're comfortable with doing stuff that most people probably wouldn't be comfortable with having their characters portrayed on national television.
In regards to Billie, I agree.
Go ahead.
Hit your three. No, aim,
okay,
hit your three.
And third. Okay, and third, yeah, because the delay is going to kill us here. In regards to the Natalya thing that you mentioned about the best there is thing, yeah, the sarcastic ass in me thought as soon as she said the best there was at stealing my uncle's catchphrase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In Montreal.
Well, you know, got to get over somehow.
But yeah, so, but what I was going to say to your point too was that, yes, Billie, I agree, it's more of a comfortability with her and Peyton that she feels like she can be goofy. But if you see their Twitter stuff, if you see the stuff like on the ride along, she's a little more low key. And when she's not as plastering the makeup on as the character is on television, she's actually kind of cute. So, like, it's just maybe it's her personality turned up to 10. Like, you know, Cornette and Bischoff and all them love to say that that's the best character is you turned up. So maybe that's what it is. But, you know, that's kind of my same issue with Natalya is that turned up character is not always appealing.
Yet another vignette with the puppet and the bird backstage here. I mean, obviously this is setting up the return of Bray Wyatt here. At this point, do you care about Bray Wyatt? And that's the best question I could think to ask in this situation. Axe.
No.
Whatever.
No.
Bray should be following the buzzards to AEW at this point.
Yeah.
Because honestly, a fresh start would do him a world of good somewhere else. Main event sees Bobby Lashley, Baron Corbin, and Drew McIntyre take on Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, and their mystery partner, D-Nope. Gotta wait for Sunday for that. The debuting on Monday Night Raw, well, technically, AJ Styles. They raise a point that this is AJ's first time on Raw in his, for actively as a competitor on Raw in his entire WWE career. Not technically true, but close enough that I'll grant them some leeway with it. AJ was briefly on Raw when he first debuted after the Rumble and the build-up to WrestleMania, but that was before they really reestablished the brand split as a thing. Once they got fully back into the brand split, AJ had always been Team SmackDown. Are you okay with AJ moving over to Monday Night Raw here, or would you have rather kept him as the face of SmackDown Live, the face that runs the
face
place,
that runs the
in
place.
The house, in the house AJ that AJ Styles built. Yes. It took me a second to get there, but I got there.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
My only issue with it is purely a storyline thing, and why would he have this match with Randy Orton to basically decide who was really the face of SmackDown to win it and then jump to Raw? But it just makes the storytelling look stupid. That's really my only issue. AJ Styles is going to be good anywhere he goes. It's nice that he's on Raw getting more exposure because he just signed his, what, 3-year extension or whatever the hell it was. So AJ deserves it.
It was either
AJ can
two
check
or three.
It off the, I thought it was three, but maybe it was two. Regardless, he can check off the box that now he's on the flagship show and he's getting the most exposure because Raw still does draw better than SmackDown. It's good. It's good for AJ. So I can't be mad about that.
I know you don't entirely care for the current Universal Champion, but even you have to admit to be very intrigued at the possibility of Seth Rollins and AJ Styles for the Universal title, do you not?
Intrigued is strong words. That means you think that they'd be able to make a storyline that makes me give a shit more than the fact that it'll probably be a decent match.
At this point, I've given up on the storylines. I just look forward to the good matches.
Okay, well, the storyline...
Have you noticed, though? Like the builds have been shit, but the pay-per-views this year have been really good.
Yeah, they have been above average. I can't remember what I scored everything, but I don't remember anything being complete garbage just yet. So, it should be interesting.
I don't think I've gone beneath a 7 for any of the pay-per-views this year.
I want to say I went to like a 6 or a 5.5 for something, but that's still not bad. That's still average or above average, however you want to look at it. So, yeah, nothing's been the drizzling shit, so that's good.
What did you think of the 6-man tag match itself here? I thought that McIntyre got to stand tall, which was good for him. I also think that this is McIntyre's last time on Raw for a while, at least because they kind of teased him over to SmackDown last week, and I feel like that would be a trigger that would definitely could be used to be pulled, giving a big top-level heel star over to SmackDown Live. Otherwise, though, I feel like kind of clunky in places once again here, but I'm going to once again blame that on not working with some of these people in a while. Like the AJ and Lashley thing I thought was really clunky, but AJ and Lashley haven't been in a ring together since their TNA days.
And that
AJ
Lashley
was on his
first run of TNA back in like 2009.
Yeah,
when he debuted at Lockdown, we don't mean the second run.
Yeah, because if I'm not mistaken, when Lashley came back, AJ was on his way out the door, was he not?
He was either on his way out or just out. Because Bobby was also back intermittently because he was still doing the Bellator stuff, or the MMA thing, kind of.
Right.
I don't exactly remember when his official re-return, whatever you want to call it, was. But I know they kind of bumped into each other during the first run in 2009 when he debuted at Lockdown. So that much I know.
What did you think of the triple finish for Lashley?
It was fun. The crowd seemed to appreciate it. I mean, every 6-man usually ends in a flurry of signatures or finishers, so I'm neither here nor there. It's very much how WWE does it, but the match is okay. Like, it did have its moments where it was a little clunky, but it was still fun. The crowd still seemed to not hate it. AJ Styles is a big boon, so it brought the energy up, so that's good. And yes, I agree. McIntyre needs to go to SmackDown because the top end of Raw is already getting a little too heavy, so I'd rather see McIntyre on SmackDown get, like, the WWE Championship than kind of be stuck in the intercontinental scene in Raw.
Well, yeah, my thought for McIntyre to SmackDown was you have a babyface SmackDown, you have a babyface champion over on SmackDown right now and a somewhat depleted heel roster over there. I can't really think of anyone who would be a top-level heel on SmackDown other than Daniel Bryan. So you could slide McIntyre... Orton's coming off of that loss to Styles and hasn't really been relevant on a consistent basis on SmackDown in quite a while.
You really think Orton needs a couple wins to be relevant? He's Orton. All he needs to do is fly in and RKO somebody and suddenly he takes his claim. Are you really going to not believe Orton?
Well, it looks like they're setting up Orton for a few with Mustafa, no longer Mustafa Ali.
I mean, no, that's possible. I'm just saying, Orton is like one of those Teflon guys to me where it doesn't matter what he's coming off of. If they need him to be in the main event scene, all he has to do is RKO somebody or show up and interfere in something, and boom, it's legitimate. He's a 13-time champion.
That's fair enough, I guess. Either way, though, there is a lack of depth in main event level talent over on SmackDown that I think McIntyre could slide right into.
That I agree about, yes.
And that's going to officially wrap us up for this episode of Monday Night Raw. Let me get my piece of paper out so I can write down what our thoughts are for the cumulative year-end awards that we're doing. Let's go into the final reaction, Andrew. You ready?
Yes.
Favorite match or moment?
The Andrade-Finn Balor match.
Sorry, I had to mute my microphone so I could sneeze. I'm right there with you, Balor and Andrade, and this is the second week in a row that we've given our best match to Balor. I feel like we're going to do that a lot this year on Raw.
He's been doing good.
A least favorite Raw match or moment?
Probably just Ruby Riott in general. Like that whole thing, because like we were talking, that just, aside from me just saying the Viking experience, which I think everybody's going to hate, it's just Ruby Riott has no business being in a ring with a champion anytime soon. Like that needs to stop happening.
The Viking experience, that's so fucking stupid. I can't not give it. Sorry, I can't.
That's fine. I figured you were Tony Wood after he watched it, so.
Scale of 1 to 10, Andrew.
I gave it a 6.5. Like, aside from a dumb name, the show wasn't that bad. I saw what it was trying to do. It was fun. The people seemed to like the debuts, more or less. And Miz getting color the hard way, that was definitely a cool scene to open the show. So I'm okay with it.
I could just hear Vince backstage yelling, "Go wide, damn it!" Because blood in the first hour is not something Vince is cool with.
First 20 minutes.
Speaking of which, that opening promo took fucking forever to get where it was going.
Yeah, that was hard. Like, I'm not going to say that was a good opening promo, but The Miz did save it, so I can't be mad.
I was tempted to give that my Greg Watchery of the week. But I'm sure there will be plenty of opportunities. I'm sure there will be plenty of opportunities down the road to yell and shame at Stephanie for taking up too much time on TV with promos. I'm at a 7.5, actually. I'm slightly higher than you are. And the reason I'm at a 7.5 is because I actually really enjoyed all of the in-ring content. And like we were talking about a little bit ago, I focus more on the matches that happened rather than the stories being told, so I can enjoy it from more of a visual perspective. I try to kind of leave my brain at the door when it comes to WWE creative anymore. On a show like this, there's not a whole lot of stories being told. It's just a case of who's jumping what show, who's going to end up where, and how are they going to interact with the people that they're on the show with now. And it led to three really good matches. It led to some angle advancement and finally getting us to where we knew where we were going with Becky Lynch and Lacey Evans. It adds a nice little layer of intrigue to the women's division with Naomi now being moved over and involved with Bayley. That's part of the whole fallout from the Sasha Banks situation here. And you put a couple of new teams into the Raw Tag Team title picture, which immediately make those belts mean more because of the fact that you have the former multiple-time SmackDown champions in the Usos and the current reigning NXT champions in the Viking experience now on Monday Night Raw as well. I feel like that's going to have to be the way we say it from now going forward on the show, Andrew. I think you may have started
basically like
thing.
Comic book guy from Simpsons. You Viking experience team.
Team name ever.
I mean, it's up there.
Also, was it just me or did it look like Lacey Evans was dressed as Jacques Rougeau tonight? She's the Mountie.
I think that was the gimmick. They were in Canada.
I do not disagree with that, but I was half expecting Jacques Rougeau to show up. I mean, I'd say PCO, but he's kind of busy these days.
Yeah, and you know, if they needed him for French commentary, Jacques got to be around there somewhere. You know, they could have done that. He could have come out and applied Canadian rules to the whole match. That'd been fantastic.
Jeez. Now we're having bad WCW flashbacks.
I wouldn't say that was bad. That was gimmicky and kind of cringy, but it was still funny. Especially since it was Lance Storm, the most fucking straight and narrow guy in the world.
All I have to say to that is, don't blame Canada. Blame yourselves.
Fair enough. Just remember you have
MVP
to count to five with Canadian rule. MVP. MVP would probably have to be Andrade.
You son of a bitch. I'm going with Andrade as well. Was worried that he was going to stick out like a sore thumb away from the sports show over on SmackDown, but did not. Looked right at place here, fit in perfectly with Balor. The match had a few moments here and there, but I think, like we talked about, that can be contributed to them not working together in a while, if at all. This may have been a first-time-ever matchup, actually, to my knowledge, because I don't think their paths would have crossed in NXT.
They should have crossed in New Japan. I don't remember.
Okay, that's a. I'll have to look and see if I can find any. I'm going to have to look and see if I can find any Fergal Devitt versus La Sombra.
Correct. Or Prince Devitt,
thanks.
Probably, depending. But yeah, that could be it. La Sombra was IWGP Intercontinental Champion. So there's a chance that overlapped somewhere.
We'll look into that and have that information for you next week here on the show. In addition, we'll also have Tony's breakdown of this week's episode for you next week here on the show, so that way we can update Tony's year-to-date standings as well. My overall Raw rating for the year actually jumped ahead of yours with tonight's episode.
I know, because I was only a half point ahead of you.
Go ahead. Andrew.
All right, say something now.
All right. I was saying that my overall year-to-date for Raw for the 2 weeks we've done has now moved ahead of yours. I'm now at a 7. You're at a 6.75.
Yeah, and I was just agreeing with that because I think I was only a half a point ahead of you last week, and now you're, a full point ahead of me now or something like that. So it makes sense. It makes sense.
Fun fact, neither of our Greg Watcheries from last week appeared on tonight's show.
What was the Greg Watcheries we picked last week?
You picked Mojo, I picked Dana.
Oh, fair point. Yeah, that maybe they couldn't make it because of the weather. And it was such a better show, not a better show because I gave it a higher rating last week, but it was just more palatable, I think, without the weird cutaways to people that nobody really cares about.
Yeah, I think the highs were higher last week, but the lows were lower, whereas this one was more consistent top to bottom.
I'm not going to disagree with that. So now
that
I'm just expecting Tony to give it a 5.5.
But that also has to be expected with the whole Raw after Mania thing there. You're going to have your big moments for the show after WrestleMania here. They're also trying to make the Superstar Shakeup a big deal as well. What will be the real telling point is when we start to build to Money in the Bank next week here on the Red Brand.
Perhaps. I did like how Superstar Shakeup kind of combined the usual Raw after Mania concept plus a shakeup. So that was different. I like that one better than separating the two.
That's going to officially wrap us up for tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw. Andrew, where can people find your work at?
Ooh, you can find my work at thechairshot.com.
Your top five matches of the week is up right now. People can vote for their favorite. I have my own personal preference as far as that went. I believe I went with the same one you did, the one that you listed at number one as well.
Yeah, that was surprisingly good. I'm only saying that because the previous match wasn't wonderful. So I'm just this told the story, and it was actually all right. All right, cool.
The kickoff was more about moves. This one right here kind of told more of an in-depth story while still working in the same high spots that they did on the kickoff show.
Well, yeah, and I don't expect my top five to look like anyone else's since I'm covering the Champion Carnival for All Japan this month. So I'll be watching more stuff that most people probably don't watch. Yeah. That's the fun part.
Yes. If you're big into Pura Resu, make sure you guys check out the Chair Shot this month, because in addition to the New Japan coverage that we usually have for all of their major shows, such as the Road to Wrestling Dontaku, Andrew, and I'm going to butcher the fuck out of his last name.
Say Matthew. Just say Matthew.
Matthew Scarapone have their coverage of the Champions Carnival from All Japan Pro Wrestling, which, as Andrew explained to me, because I watch exactly zero All Japan, is basically the All Japan version of the G1 Climax.
Yes. That's a fair assessment.
Quick question for you, and then we'll get off the air. Do you think an American company could pull off a G1 Climax-style tournament and keep the fans interested in it for the duration? If so, which company do you think could pull it off the best?
That is a good question. And I think WWE has proven they can, because all of their tournaments, be it Dusty Classic or Cruiserweight Classic or Mae Young, tend to do pretty well on the network and be high points of the WWE. But it doesn't fit into the way they tell a story. They'd need to literally not have a month where they build toward the pay-per-view and just have a month and a half of, you know, round robin matches, and then have the payoff at like a SummerSlam or something like that. So it could work. It's just, it doesn't work within their business model at the moment, but I think they could do it. They have enough hardcore fans that appreciate tournaments. Casuals would probably appreciate the tournament if they built it up as something big, like bringing back King of the Ring using the old name with a round robin style. So it's the pieces are all there. It's just up to if they want to pull the trigger or not.
Impact Wrestling tried with the Bound for Glory series, and that was an abject failure.
Not the first one.
Honestly, if I had to say one thing, I think that you're onto something with the WWE pulling it off, but I don't think it would be the main brand that would do it. I think NXT is more capable of pulling off a G1 Climax than the WWE proper would be.
The problem is, though, is that the network stuff is still very niche. Like, you see the numbers are public, and you see the reactions that NXT people get on the main roster, which is little to nothing. The main roster is what needs to push it, or it's just going to basically remain unseen for the most part. So that's why I'm hoping if they did, it would be main roster and they could do something with it. And not like I said, Bound for Glory series wasn't bad. The main issue with the Bound for Glory series, convoluted as fuck. Because it was like a submission gave you 7 points, a pinfall gave you 3 points, a countout gave you 1 point. Or like they had different point values for everything instead of just win, lose, or draw, which would have made the world so much fucking easier.
Would have probably been easier to keep track of if you were reviewing Impact at the time, such as I was.
Oh, you were reviewing during then? I'm sorry.
Wrestling's the precursor to the Chair Shot, WrestlingSmash.com. Yes, sir.
Yeah, some asinine scores too. Like what? Samoa Joe 1 year had like 38 points, and AJ Styles had like 24. But if he won by submission both times, then they'd tie. I don't fucking stupid shit.
Bro, I got the greatest idea, bro.
Uh oh.
Anytime you hear the word bro on the end of any sentence in wrestling, you know you're up shit creek with no paddle.
No. A short bro like that, it's basically like bro Morris Code or Morris Brode. That's what it is. Short bros or Russo, bro is Riddle. So that it's Morris Brode. It depends on how you say it for how much I care.
The short bros equal negative fucks given. The longer bros, partial fucks given.
Correct. And I'm like, all right, go. Let me see where this is going.
I'm going to get back to Joey Janela's Spring Break 3 Part 2. I already finished the first one. I will not be reviewing these shows for the Chair Shot. These were more of my own viewing intention, the fact that I was sick and needed something to watch that I could
watch without having to pay proper attention to. I will be getting back to United We Stand. We'll hopefully have that up sometime within the next 2 or 3 days here on thechairshot.com. In addition, good news, they finally put Homecoming up on the GWN app.
Oh, thank God.
So I will be able to use a properly formatted version of Homecoming in order to do my review. I won't have to rely on alternative means.
Nice.
And
nice.
That'll arrive. And that'll arrive to the chair shot hopefully before the April 28th air date of Rebellion as well, which Andrew will be covering for the site.
Yes.
So you can read my Homecoming review and my United We Stand review to get you ready for Rebellion, and then read Andrew's Rebellion review to find out what happened.
That works. It should all be nicely timed, so it hypes it up well. Plus, I cover it every week, too, so we have the weekly television there, too.
It's corporate synergy. We're making this work.
There we go. We almost look like we know what we're doing and we're like professional or something. Go fucking figure.
Almost.
Almost.
Let's be clear. Almost. For the hopefully returning next week, Tony Acero. He's the line in the sand, Andrew Balazs. I'm Harry Broadhurst. This has been the April 15th, 2019 edition of the Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Andrew, you get to be Tony this week.
Deuces, bitches.
Won't you share with me if you can?
Yeah, I'm not feeling well. So usually I give you guys a musical interlude and I do announcer voice here. It's not going to happen this week. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next Monday night. We'll talk about all the people who came over who left Raw to go to SmackDown in the Superstar Shakeup. And we'll get you ready for the road to Money in the Bank next week here on the Raw Reaction on the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you guys next Monday night.